This is Dylan FM, a Freak Music Club podcast. I'm Bob Dylan. If you love Dylan, you're in the right place. This season, we're going deep on Time Out of Mind to celebrate its 25th anniversary. Here's your host, Craig Danieloff.
A song is like a dream, Dylan writes in Chronicles, and you try to make it come true. They're like strange countries that you have to enter.
The first description of Time Out of Mind in the New York Times was bleak. All Music called it dark, Pitchfork said it was about life and its iterant lows, and Entertainment Weekly called Dylan a heartbroken crank. The songs on Time Out of Mind do seem to be about lost love, desperation, aging, a look towards the end and coming to grips with what one might call a world gone wrong. The word mortality came up in interviews, no doubt inspired not only by the music, but by the dangerous case of pericarditis that Dylan went through just before the album was released. While the incident followed the recording of the album, the death of Jerry Garcia in 1995 is likely to have taken place nearer to the time of writing of these songs, and Dylan's father Abe Zimmerman passed away at the age of 56. The same age Dylan was in 1997. Of course, there's rarely just one level to what a Dylan song is or may be about. Our guest today has given a lot of thought to the possible meanings or influences or themes within or behind the songs on Time Out of Mind, and he wrote a book that shares the fascinating results of that work with us. Grayley Herron is a professor, the chair of the English department at Xavier University in Cincinnati, Ohio. He specializes in modern Irish literature, modern drama, Samuel Beckett, and Bob Dylan. Grayley Herron's book is called Dreams and Dialogues in Bob Dylan's Time Out of Mind. It was published by Anthem Press in 2021. And was recently released in paperback. There's a link in the show notes if you want to get a copy, and I recommend that you do. The central premise of the book is that Time Out of Mind represents a series of dreams, a conceit introduced with several pages of quotes and comments from Dylan himself talking about songs and dreams. Grayley argues that the songs on the album make up a single connected song cycle, a view Herron traces back to the great Paul Williams. From there, Grayley finds what he calls three dimensions of experience filtered through the songs. The first is murder ballads, the second is religious allegory, and the last is race in America. The bulk of the book is made up of him showing how the lyrics and songs reflect each of these dimensions. In the talk you're about to hear, Grayley summarizes and gives examples of his analysis of the lyrics of Time Out of Mind in relation to murder ballads. This is a recording of a talk he gave to our premium members a few months ago, and in the interest of time, he narrowed his focus to share just a sliver of one of the book's three theses. After his presentation, I asked a few questions, which you'll get to hear. Grayley did have slides, so in this case, the benefit of being a premium member would be the chance to watch the video version, not only seeing Grayley speak, but seeing his slides as well. But for now, here's Professor Grayley Herron in the presentation he shared on the role of murder ballads in Time Out of Mind.
Well, thanks everyone for coming out or staying in for our virtual event. I am hugely honored to be invited. If you are watching this live stream, then you must already love Time Out of Mind, which makes my job a lot easier because I don't need to convince you of what a great work of art it is. Instead, I'm going to talk about certain things I hear going on individually and collectively in the songs recorded for Time Out of Mind. But let me first quickly say what this talk is not and what my book on Time Out of Mind is not. I do not presume to offer the correct, definitive, final word on what Time Out of Mind really and truly and exclusively means. Like all great works of art, this album is open to a multitude of interpretations, and what you hear depends largely upon the perspective from which you listen and the interpretive approach you bring to bear on the songs. Now, look, I'm an English professor. I specialize in words. And so, not surprisingly, a lot of what you're about to hear from me today and a lot of what you might read in the book focuses on themes and theories I've derived from Dylan's lyrics. That is not to say that the only thing that matters in Time Out of Mind is the lyrics, or that the lyrics dwarf all other considerations like music, vocals, production values. I do not believe that at all. I acknowledge and appreciate the importance of the multiple elements and collaborations that contribute to the total effect of this album, and indeed to all of Dylan's art. I will leave it to others, more expert than me, to comment upon those nonverbal elements, and I look forward to hearing more about that from some of my fellow panelists and probably from some of you in our virtual audience. The little row that I'll be hoeing today is mostly lyrical, but it's a big field. And I'm eager to learn from those working in other sections of Dylan's farm. All right, enough disclaimers. My book is called Dreams and Dialogues in Dylan's Time Out of Mind. So first, I'm going to say a bit about the dream framework of the album, and then I'll focus on some of the intertextual dialogues I hear between songs on the album and the musical tradition of murder ballads. A song is like a dream, Dylan writes in Chronicles, and you try to make it come true. They're like strange countries that you have to enter. Of course, you don't have to be an artist to be familiar with the surreal recombinational realm of dreams. We all know firsthand how dreams work. Dreams take the stuff from personal experience, which happened in the past, combine it with fantasies of stuff that didn't happen, but that the dreamer desires or fears might happen, and mixes in references the dreamer is familiar with from the source, from other sources like songs, books, movies, television, myths, legends, fairy tales. Dylan enters this strange country of dreams in Time Out of Mind and allows those dreams to come true through the songs. The album depicts a series of dreams from a fictional dreamer's perspective. I've listed some on screen, and you can probably think of others. These dream songs consist of pleasurable and painful experiences the dreamer had with a former lover, combines them with fantasies of things he wishes would happen or fears might happen between him and his ex, and mixes them with related experiences or fantasies from other sources, stored away in the dreamer's unconscious mind, but taken out and reanimated during the album's series of dreams. These reference points are wide-ranging, and the album can look very different viewed from one lens rather than another. Dylan layers his references intertextually so that they unfold simultaneously, but for clarity's sake, I separate them out in my book into three main categories: murder ballads, religious allegory, and race in America. Today, I'm going to focus on that first layer of dreams drawn from and modeled after murder ballads. There is a long tradition in blues and folk music of murder ballads. Again, if you're listening to this program, then chances are you have some familiarity with these songs, so I'll keep my overview brief. Suffice it to say that murder ballads typically dramatize the buildup to and consequences from murdering a lover, sometimes told in third person as a story, and sometimes in first person, usually from the killer's perspective. Murder ballads often involve a man luring a woman to a lonesome place and attacking her, in many cases to cover up a secret pregnancy or out of suspicion that she's been cheating on him. Some variations turn the tables and depict a woman killing a man, usually as vengeance for his infidelity. Traditional murder ballads culminate in the confession, contrition, and punishment of the killer. In other words, they tend to serve as cautionary tales warning against the wages of sin. Although murder ballads usually have a moralistic agenda, we should not overlook the rampant misogyny of the genre. Yeah, the killer, usually male, may pay the ultimate price for committing murder. Nevertheless, the singer gets a lot of musical mileage out of graphically reenacting the usually female victim's brutal slaying, which always runs the risk of titillating audiences rather than horrifying them or warning them. It's usually the crime rather than the punishment that makes the deepest impression in these songs. Murder ballads were routinely included in the repertoire of folk singers in the late 50s and early 60s. For instance, Dylan's friend Paul Clayton recorded an entire album of them called Bloody Ballads. Dylan sang some murder ballads too, including Pretty Polly, and Omi Wise, and one of his earliest compositions, The Ballad of Donald White, is a pretty straightforward murder ballad. But his most important immersion in the murder ballad tradition came in the early 90s with his two folk albums, Good As I've Been to You in 92 and World Gone Wrong in 93. Several songs Dylan covered on these albums were murder ballads, including some of his best performances like Frankie and Albert, Delia, and Love, Henry. Singing these first-person accounts and inhabiting the perspectives of these killers apparently inspired Dylan to begin writing his own original murder ballads for Time Out of Mind. Now let's dig into these songs. The album drops us in the middle of the dreamer's troubled mind from the very beginning. The first song, Lovesick, opens with four staccato stabs. Ring, 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 I'm walking. I'll stop my imitation there. You know it, right? And it always reminds me of that grisly shower scene in Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. And then a distant and distorted voice emerges from the fog to announce, I'm walking through the streets that are dead, walking, walking with you in my head. The hunt is on as the listener follows the singer deeper into his nightmarish fantasies of stalking down and punishing his former lover. Different songs accentuate different sides or stages or layers of his dark reveries, but they're all painted in shades of gray and black. This psycho is a sicko, and the source of his sickness is love, a contagion which metastasizes throughout the album. The dreamer's dark fantasies even infect Make You Feel My Love, generally regarded as the brightest song on the album. In the book, I refer to this hit as one of the most loved songs by people who hate Dylan and one of the most hated songs by those who love him. For a lot of hardcore Dylan fans, the song is embarrassingly banal and cliche, precisely the kind of shallow sentimentality that Dylan became famous for rejecting and counteracting in popular music. Viewed in isolation, these complaints might have some legitimacy, but viewed within the context of the album, there's way more going on here. Placed alongside sinister companion pieces in this delirious series of fever dreams, Make You Feel My Love starts to sound like a thinly veiled threat. There's nothing that I wouldn't do to make you feel my love. Oh, really? Just how far would this singer go to force his love upon his elusive target? Make You Feel My Love becomes the first in a subgenre of Dylan songs scattered throughout his 21st century albums of murder ballads masquerading as torch songs sung by sickos disguised as Romeos. Viewed within the dreamscape of Time Out of Mind, Make You Feel My Love marks an early step toward what I call in the book somnicide. That is the singer's fantasy of a dream killing. The threats are subtle enough in Make You Feel My Love to have gone largely unnoticed, but there's no ignoring the flagrant menace of Can't Wait, delivered in the diabolical growl of the big bad wolf. Early in the song, he is on the hunt. Well, it's way past midnight, and there are people all around, some on their way up, some on their way down. The air burns, and I'm trying to think straight, and I don't know how much longer I can wait. He huffs and puffs and is ready to blow her house down. I'm breathing hard, standing at the gate, and I don't know how much longer I can wait. Later in the song, he is clearly ready to pounce. If I ever saw you coming, I don't know what I might do. I'd like to think I could control myself, but it isn't true. That's how it is when things disintegrate, and I don't know how much longer I can wait. One definitely suspects that he can't and won't wait much longer before depositing his latest victim in the lonely graveyard of his mind. In the book, I go into detail about all the songs that depict different stages of the dreamer's somnicidal fantasy, from stalking and attacking his victim to going on the run and being captured and extradited, to rotting away in a prison cell on death row, to being led to the gallows and placed on the scaffold for execution. These different stages are not told in any kind of chronological order. The dream logic of this album doesn't take the form of linear narrative, but rather works according to associational texture, to borrow a term from Laura Tenchert's recent talk in Miami. The other thing worth pointing out is that unlike traditional murder ballads, Dylan's murder ballads never depict contrition on the part of the killer. This somnicidal dreamer in Time Out of Mind neither asks for forgiveness nor receives it. This album is emphatically not a narrative of redemption and does not serve any moralistic agenda. Dylan's most brilliant subversion of the murder ballad tradition is Saved for Last on Highlands. Like some of Dylan's most memorable album closers, Highlands stands apart as something distinct, part epilogue and part exit ramp, out of the album and into whatever comes next. In this case, the song is also a wake-up call in more ways than one. The singer reports, "Windows were shaken all night in my dreams, but things have changed. Woke up this morning, and I looked at the same old page, same old rat race, life in the same old cage." The title invites associations with the Scottish Highlands, or even with the Highlands of Heaven, but what the song in fact delivers is a washed-up, burned-out loner who has lost his mojo and is drained of all virility. Earlier, I mentioned the misogyny typical of murder ballads, and this power-hungry hatred is consistent with the dream killer's persona in several Time Out of Mind songs. In Highlands, however, Dylan pulls the shag rug out from under his dreamer by exposing him as an impotent horn dog, a big bad wolf who has lost his fangs. This comes through most clearly in the middle sequence with the sassy Boston waitress. The singer keeps firing pickup lines, but he's shooting blanks. The sexual symbolism is hilariously over the top. Freud would have had a field day with all the not so subtle hints at sexual dysfunction. The singer has no eggs, he has no pencil, and he has no chance of seducing this server who ain't got to serve nobody. The singer beats a hasty retreat only to see all the young lovers who are doing what he wishes he could do but can't now and maybe never could. The impotence of Highlands is a perfect way to conclude the murder ballad song cycle of Time Out of Mind, undermining the vicarious violence and sexual menace that rises and falls over the course of the album. By the end, he's over the hill and far away. The dreamer is all used up. He's out of time and out of mind, with his heart in the Highlands, his hands in his pocket, and his head in the clouds. I thank you for tuning in and for listening.
Grayley, that was fantastic. My question for you, Grayley, is you have the three different things going on. How do you think about them together? Meaning, are they three alternative possibilities? Are they three things that are floating in and out? Are some you feel more confident or stronger about than others?
That's a good question. I wrestled with that a lot in writing the book because they are at times, it seems, mutually exclusive. I mean, it's a legitimate question. Well, how can it be this, but also at the same time be that? And luckily, after I wrote the book, Dylan gave me the perfect answer to the question with the song I Contain Multitudes, right? Which we keep quoting from that famous line from Song of Myself, Leaves of Grass, Walt Whitman. But of course, the full quote is even better in this case. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. I don't think that it's a matter of picking which of these is the correct answer. And like I've said in my disclaimer from the start, I'm open to a wide variety of interpretations. In fact, that's one of the hallmarks of any great work of art, right? That it lends itself, it opens itself, it welcomes various interpretations far beyond what the artist himself or herself could have ever intentionally had in mind. And one of the great hallmarks of a work of art is that it keeps growing and changing after the life of the artist, right? And it remains relevant to different generations and cultures and eras. So, yeah, these are kind of three different interpretations. And yet with each chapter, I think I find so much evidence to support that thesis that within the world of that chapter, I stick with that lens to view it from. But there's no attempt really to reconcile or make the account book balance out between those three chapters. I offer those as three different kinds of things I hear going on in the songs in Time Out of Mind, sometimes compatible, sometimes not. But even when they're not, I still don't rescind it. I contradict myself very well. I contradict myself. I think that Dylan's contradicting himself all the time. And rather than trying to make sense of himself, he just rolls with it.
What I found so enjoyable about your book is presenting possibilities for me to think about, accept some, discard some. But it was very fun to just go along and see these things that I would have never thought of, or relationships I would have never known about.
And you don't have to be a great artist like Dylan to relate to it, right? Dreams also don't make a lot of sense, or they have a logic, but they're a logic that's idiosyncratic and often elusive to even the dreamer. So if different things fade in and out, I think that rather than that being inconsistent or contradictory, I think it is consistent with the kind of a amorphous nature of dreams.
When I read Grayley's Time Out of Mind book many months before this presentation and conversation, I found it both interesting and worthwhile. Analysis like this, at least the good ones, arm us with more information about the references or influences on Dylan's music, and provide at least more ways to think as we each try to figure out, if we want to, what the songs mean to us. Dreams and Dialogues in Dylan's Time Out of Mind is a very well-written and thorough analysis, and I think any Time Out of Mind fan will deeply enjoy it. Check out the episode notes below for a link to order it on Amazon. Deep thanks to Grayley Herron for writing it and for talking to us about it.
Don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast. It really helps. For bonus episodes and more, become a member at freakmusic.club/join. And you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at FMC_Dylan. Thanks for listening.